don't need to be religious or even consider ourselves a mystic to feel that invisible presence of support in our lives. Lorna Byrne has been audibly and visually in communication with angels since she was a baby. They would even play with her hair when they wanted her attention. They became her constant companions throughout her life. And she can see your angels as well. And she suggests that they are here offering you a deeper peace than you might find on your own. I'm Robin. Stay tuned for Tributaries. Lorna, when we spoke the first time, we were laughing about how unemployment was up. And you were saying how the angels, too many of them are unemployed. People can have more of a focus on connecting with angels and using a very valuable commodity for us here on Earth.
You know, I don't think we call on the angels enough. God has given each of us a guardian angel. And I know those unemployed angels, they're still tumbling down from the heavens.
Right. They're still on the shoulder,
you
right?
You can never over ask for help whatsoever.
Yes. Lorna, share what it was like for you as a child, having to be on guard about why you appeared to be slow or perhaps were perceived as being mentally off because you did have such a connection from an early age with angels and angelic presence.
Well, I have to say I'm very happy, you know, that I was born dyslexic and that way back in that time, that if a child showed any signs of, you know, being slow in any way or not talking, they were considered retarded. And for me, that was lucky. And I know that's hard to understand. I didn't start to talk, I think, till I was 2.5 or more. And it was hardly any words. But all the time I was communicating with the angels, didn't know they were angels because I was only a little child. You know, I always remember lying in the cot and my mom bent over and I don't know what she was doing, but I was ignoring her. And I suppose my parents just noticed I wasn't actually giving them attention. But I had these beautiful beings in my life and they're still there today and I see them physically. You know, like I'm seeing you on the screen, but can't see your guardian angel now, but I see you. And for me, that is just, it's normal. I don't know what life is like for you,
right,
not seeing them in that way or not seeing the soul of a loved one either. And of course, now when I talk about the soul of a loved one, I always talk about my brother who sat in front of the fire with his back to the fire and we playing with the blocks my dad had made for us, for me to play with. And we were putting one block on top of the other, just like two children would. To me, this was so normal. And our hands touched. It was like as if one hand went into the other. My hand went into his or his went into mine. And there were sparks everywhere. And I know I burst out laughing. I felt so happy. I felt so much love. It was at that time that the angels told me that they were angels and that my little brother was a soul. He had died before I was born.
Right.
And I had to keep it a secret. And I remember feeling sad because he looked very real to me, except when we touched, it was like I went into him or him went into me. And he was always older than me by a few years. But at times I would have seen my mom in Old Camanum in the small little room. There was a fireplace and sometimes she'd be sitting there and she'd just fall asleep. And then I would see my brother in her arms as an infant.
Mm.
But again, that was normal. And I wasn't bothering to talk with my parents or anyone else like another child would, because the angels were talking to me and they taught me how to talk back to them, even without words. Sometimes I would say that's a three-way system or a five-way system. But lots of times when I was completely alone, when I got older, I would talk to them as I'm talking to you in the same way.
When did you become aware that, oh, everyone's life doesn't look like this?
That's a lovely way to put it. I don't think I came aware in the way maybe everyone thinks in that sense. Because when I looked at people around me, they were living life. And I suppose the thing for me was that I was considered retarded. You know, I was considered thick, dumb and stupid in the sense. And you were put in school to the back of the class, or you weren't, how would I say, ignored within the family most of the time, or with aunts and uncles or other people outside. So I was more aware of that than, because I saw no difference in seeing the angels. But one thing the angels would say to me all of the time, and that was, Lorna, they know no better. And over time, I got to understand that all the people around me, my family and even the strangers, they didn't know what I was seeing. They would never understand. And I loved them anyway. They taught me how to love everyone. It didn't matter if they, you know, said negative things about me at all. I just smiled. And maybe sometimes when I smiled at someone or a teacher who was saying something really negative, maybe that smile even made them think more negative of me.
Right. I could understand that, certainly. And yet your angels wisely told you, let's just keep this between us for now.
Yeah. And they were constantly reminding me to keep it a secret all my life.
Yes.
You know, when I was a child, it was more or less every day. As I got older, it was a little less. They didn't have to remind me so often. And then as an adult, they did remind me at times, don't say anything, don't let anyone know. If you do, you'll be locked up.
Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't be here talking to you if I had turned around and said to my mom, there's an angel beside you, or my grandmother is beside you.
Right.
I would have been put into one of those institutions.
Yeah, well, times have changed somewhat, thank goodness, and not completely where we would necessarily want them to be right now. But you were taught early on by the angels to be a keen observer. What did that look like, and how did you use keying into nature to do this?
Well, they taught me everything I know out in nature. I'm dyslexic as well, so I didn't learn anything from books or anything like that. I'm severely dyslexic. They would say to me when coming home from school, let's cross the fields. And even though I was small, sometimes they would show me where there was a little gap and I could fit through. Other times they would have me, what would I say, squeezing through two bars of a gate or something like that. So they taught me everything I know out in nature, and they taught me to see. And now I know that humanly people have lost that gift. You only look, you don't see.
That's quite a good distinction that you just made between looking and seeing. And I often catch myself looking and not seeing. But at least I'm catching myself more and more. Well, your communication with your angels is and has been ever present. Do you experience knowing from mind and knowing from the soul? How do you differentiate that?
I know you're saying it that way, but you know, you're talking to me, so that's not knowing. You're talking and you're asking questions. It's the same with the angels. They do it the very same way. So in a sense, knowing is something that I would have been told or shown in the past that will be of the future, that the possibilities are there if the world responds. And every time I was shown something of the future, no matter what age I was, you know, I kind of just smiled and laughed and said, okay, go away in that sense, you know, because I looked on it as impossible, humanly impossible.
Right.
I can't read or write. I have no human education, but I have this education from the angels. God had the angels educate me. So I have been educated in a different way.
Yes, and you shared an incident in your book about the time the angels told you to watch a man stealing from your dad's store, and the angels told you he wouldn't see you if you went and kind of watched him do what he was doing. Tell us that story, and have there been other times like that?
Yeah, there has been other times like that, even up to today. It's like as if God and the angels make me invisible. I'm not noticed. I could be standing at a wall watching something or being told that the person coming down the road is not nice and very angry and is, what would I say, going to have a fight with someone or going to steal something. And when I was younger, they would make me so invisible that I could stand there and watch. And I stood there and watched. But as well, I couldn't tell my dad because he wouldn't have believed me. And I felt so brokenhearted that this man would steal from my dad when I knew my dad was so good to him as well and had known him for years. And that was hard to watch that and not being able to do anything about it. But I loved him anyway. And I understood why nothing could be said, you know, because I had to keep it a secret. I couldn't let the secret out of the box in that way. But that is where the angels told me that this was going to happen. I was in the office, he came in, he was talking with my dad, and then he went into the shop on his own, like because the office and the shop were together, and I was in the shop. And there's no way he couldn't see me. Like you can see me now,
yes.
You know, and
yes.
I can see you. There was no way because I was standing quite close to him and he looked in my direction so many times. And it was like I was completely invisible. He showed no signs of seeing me there in the shop whatsoever. And I suppose I was sad and I watched his guardian angel whispering to him, telling him not to do that. But he thought it would be a great thing. And that saddened me. But again, you know, I never held it against him in any way. I still loved him. I still welcomed him, even though I knew. And that's what the angels have taught me is how to love.
And I think if we stick with the love, the same outcome will happen. That's where forgiveness comes in, right? And forgiveness, I think ultimately you get to the place where we don't need forgiveness because we see what's going on. You know, when you see all that's going on, then forgiveness is kind of thrown out because it's just a matter of not knowing any better in the moment.
Yeah, he was a good man. You know, he was a good man as well. And you're talking about forgiveness there, and that is love. Many a time a person believes that it's the person that's forgiven that receives more from the forgiveness.
Yeah, yeah. And you talk about miracles in disguise. Would you share one of your experiences with that? I think that's such a key point because we tend to want to judge things.
Yeah, and miracles happen all the time. And I think most of the time we just miss them. The angels are helping me to recall when I was out walking about many years ago, I'd say it was about maybe 20 years ago. And I met this man on the road and he was walking too. And I just walked past him and the angel said, don't look behind. So I didn't, but then I heard him call me, and he had fallen. And he had said to me, it's a miracle that you were on this road today when I fell, you know, because even though he didn't know me, it was like as if he knew spiritually that I could help him. It's like, again, another miracle was maybe during the pandemic here in Ireland, I meet this old man. He grabs a hold of my two hands and he says, oh, I'm so glad I've met you. This is a miracle for me. And I didn't know what he was talking about. I didn't even know this old man in that way. But lots of miracles happen in our everyday life. One of the miracles that have happened for billions of people around the world, they woke up this morning.
Right.
You know, yeah. We forget about yes. the everyday miracles that happen, or that you had food. It's like one story I have in one of the books, and that was a glass of milk. And that's where a young boy during real hard times knocks on a door. And he had knocked on many doors looking for something to eat, and no one gave him anything. And then he knocks on a door, another one, and a lady answers. And she looks at him and he says, do you have something to eat? And the lady didn't close the door. She left it open and she walked back into the house and she came out with a glass of milk and gave him the glass of milk. That young boy grew up and calls that glass of milk a miracle because it saved his life.
I'm sure on many levels, right?
Yeah. And yeah. then years later, this young boy had other miracles happen. Somehow he got educated. He became a doctor. He was a doctor in a hospital. And what do you think? One of his patients, except years older, was this elderly lady in bed. And he had performed surgery on her. And he had come to visit her and told her, she'll be fine. You're going to recover well. And then she said, what does it cost? What does all this cost my family? And she was sent the bill, and on the bill, it said, no charge, a glass of milk. There's a miracle, you know.
Yes, no, those synchronicities in life are just tearjerkers.
They are. Like many a time, how would I say this? Someone would be ill, or maybe at a blessing I would be doing at an event. And years later, they would come back and say, the miracle happened for me. My depression, anxiety lifted, or whatever kind of illness they had has disappeared. I don't want to name things. And then, of course, you meet the mom and dad who says, my child didn't live, but because I read angels in my hair, that's the miracle. I know my child is with me spiritually. So miracles happen in so many different ways.
Yes, and you do have such an unusual, from such a young age, understanding of death. Do you grieve? What does that look like for you? And would you say that death is one of humanity's biggest learning curves that people need to understand more about or get clearer with?
I think it's lovely the way you said, you know, learning curves in that way. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing the word you said. Yeah, it's one of the things that we all fear. We're all scared of. And I suppose the first thing I should say, no one is meant to take their own life. Your life is precious. You're meant to live. Anyone who takes their life, the world feels it. That's the only way I can describe that. So I would often meet people at book signings and their guardian angel is telling me before they even come up that this person is thinking of taking their life. So I'd make a deal with them. I might say, I want you back here at my next book signing in 2 years' time. You are not to dare to harm yourself, or I'll beat you up. That's the way I usually say it. You know, and this would be from teenagers right up to moms and dads, aunts and uncles and grannies. And of course, they always turn up.
Oh, lovely.
Good. Yes. And that is so important. You will get through it and remove that barrier and finish your story, finish living your life.
Yes, in that way. Do you have grief in your life and how do you work through it? How do you explain it?
How would I say? Because I know that it's only the human body that dies, that you live. So it's like when my husband Joe died, I was saddened. I gave out to God. Even at one stage when Joe died at the kitchen table, I screamed at God. I said, give him back. My children are too young. I can't manage. And God did answer and told me in such a, how would I say it, clear, strong voice, like a father would, that I was never to ask again. And I knew by humanly the tone of God's voice, I knew I couldn't ask a second time. And God gave him back that time. But then when the time came, when Joe did die, when he was in the bed, you know, and calling the ambulance, I was told I can't ask. And I understood why, because if I had asked and God gave him back, he would not have a good quality of life. It would have been horrible for him.
Mm. Yeah.
So in a sense, even then, even well before then, I was already grieving because I was told it was coming. He was going to be taken. And it's hard for everyone. And people grieve at different levels. I always say it depends on how much you love that person or you cared for that person. I would know plenty of parents that would grieve hugely for a child or their husband or their mom or their sister that died, but they would be relieved as well.
Oh, of course, yes.
In that way of knowing that their loved one is not suffering anymore.
Right.
It's like the young man who years ago who got trapped and the firefighters and the ambulance crowd and all knew that if they relieved him from his trap, he would die instantly. So they gave him drugs to kill pain. But the wonderful thing that they were so kind-hearted and so good that, you know, they got the parents and the family there to say goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
And that's love. You know, that kind of love is overwhelming from a stranger that's a firefighter or an ambulance driver. That's the love of healing that they have to allow a miracle to happen. And that was a miracle, even though the young man did die. When they relieved, he died instantly. But it was a miracle for the parents and the brothers and sisters that could tell their brother they love him.
Yeah. Let's talk to the parents that are listening. Many of us have experienced a child or grandchild saying something like, I was your mother one time, or is any of this real? And oftentimes it's heard, but it's ignored. And I imagine there's even more and more of this kind of thing going on that you may hear now that you're out and about traveling and doing weekends with people. How did you approach this with your children as far as talking about the angels or sharing how to recognize their wisdom and their care and their comfort?
Well, I my children are very, very open spiritually.
Were they talking about the angels perhaps before you mentioned them?
No, because I always have to be truthful. I was still to keep it a secret.
Oh, okay.
One thing that my children said to me when Angels in My Hair was written, the publisher said their names have to be changed because that was the law and that they needed to read the book. And each of them read it. And they were teenagers. And how would I say, Mom, we always knew you were different, but we could never put our finger on it. Now we know. And they're very conscious of their guardian angel and being open and receiving the guidance and working that guidance within their life and having love and compassion as well. That's very important. And they have their own children. And my grandchildren, they're different. So they're very aware of their guardian angel and they're very aware of love and caring is sharing. I would often say that because that's what my grandchildren would say a lot. Yes. And one of them is 13 now, one is 12 now, one is 9 and one is 8. And it's just lovely to see them open and being kind.
Lorna, have you met others along the way who have had the angelic awareness and depth of communication as you?
I have to be honest, no. So I'm so sorry to say that. But I have met people who have a really strong connection to the angels as well, but not in the same way as myself. And many of them would come and tell me and they would say, well, it's not exactly the same as you. You see them, you hear them so clearly. I don't. They would say they only see them in meditation or in a dream. But that's all the beginning of, I think, for mankind to open more and to start to see, not to look. Let's open. Let's become more open now. Let us say to ourselves, okay, I have nothing to lose.
Right.
I need to go. So I always say, you know, the first thing you can do is just say, okay, guardian angel, if you're there, give me a sign and ask for the simplest sign you possibly can, because it's not easy for them to give you a sign, but they will work on it. I always, you know, remember this woman saying, you know, Lorna, I've given up on my guardian angel because I've got no sign. And I said to her, are you sure you didn't? And she said, no, I didn't. Oh, I said, what did you ask for? And she said, a flower. And I said, okay, think about that. How is your guardian angel going to give you a bunch of flowers? Just think about it. Has anyone given you a flower? And she stood there thinking for a while. And then all of a sudden she went pale. She suddenly remembered that a child had handed her a daffodil.
Right. It's like that story of, I was out in the ocean and God didn't come help me. And meanwhile, a boat went by and asked them to jump in their boat. And they didn't.
You know, it's kind of wake up a little. Wake up and become aware.
Right. And wake up a little. But isn't there such a huge difference between asking God to win the lottery or please save my child or whatever? I don't know if you would differentiate between asking an angel for something or asking God for something. But in my mind, those aren't the things. I feel like if angels know everything and God knows everything, they would know.
Yeah, they do know, but everything is your choice, is your free will. I don't pray to angels. I tell people you don't pray to angels. They're there to guide you and to help you.
Mm-hmm.
But when you ask your guardian angel and you say, well, I want God to heal my child, that prayer is going straight to God. It's not that it has dwelled in your guardian angel. It's going straight to God. And it's even been enhanced more. And that's the sad thing. You know, I think I said it a little while ago. Some are healed and some are not. And I don't have an answer for that. It's like Noah. He was a young boy. I don't know if you know the story. He was a young boy that came to a talk I was giving. I was on tour and I think there was 750 people there to 1,000. And I was there early. And I see this young boy coming in with his mom and another person. And the first thing I said to God and the angels, will I go over to him? And I was told no, to ignore him. So I do what God says, you know, so I ignored this young boy. This theater filled up and I gave the talk and then questions and answers came And loads of people were asking questions. And then, this is just unbelievable, then this young boy stands up and the whole room went silent. You could hear a pin drop. You couldn't even hear anyone breathe. No one cleared their throat. There was not a sound. It was like as if that was the first time God allowed everyone in that audience to see this young boy. And I can't figure out how they couldn't have seen him in the first place, because this young boy was wired up. He had a special net on his head with things. He had a tube in his neck. He was attached to a machine. There's the first part of the miracle. And he just said, "Lorna, I don't have a question. I just want to tell you, my best friend is my guardian angel." But I knew he had more to say. And everybody, they just had their eyes on him. God had touched everyone. And then he says, which I know shocked the audience, he turned around and asked for, "Lorna, can you ask God for the gift of life for me?" Everyone in that audience had the gift of life. He hadn't. And I said to him, "I will ask, but all as I can do is ask." And the whole audience prayed for him, and I gave him a blessing and blessed everyone. And then his parents got in touch, and God did take him home to heaven, but he was given extra time. It was nearly 2 years, I think. And he spent a lot of that time and his parents in my home here in Ireland. Mm. And the doctors, when he'd go back, they couldn't figure out how he was still alive. He shouldn't have been. But I could tell you loads of stories of Noah swinging out of one of the trees, going for a walk and pretending he was Noah in the Bible, carrying his staff and everything. When he did go home to heaven, I was told what I was to do was to head over to his home. And of course, Noah knew, even though he was delighted to see me, I know he knew because the angel said, "He knows why you're here," because he will be going home to heaven soon.
Yeah. It's certainly a great example. As you mentioned, there are so many where life defies rule, defies definition. There's only that truth or that grace, which doesn't fit into what looks like cause and effect necessarily. So you saying when people have kind of skeptic attitude, it's like, sure, it's a choice. You can have a skeptic attitude or we can remain open.
I think it is a good choice. And even when young Noah died, they checked him out and turned around and said he shouldn't have been alive because his brain was like scrambled egg. Mm. Again, God chose for him to live longer, to be an example for the world, for that story to be told that you have the gift of life, even if you have aches and pains or arthritis or something mild. You still have the gift of life.
You've made many revisions to your book, Angels in My Hair, which was first published, I think, in 2008. What was revised or revisioned in the book? What was necessary for you to say?
It was that it was the 15 years and my publishers came and they asked me, would I do a new chapter? In each book, I give a little bit more information to help us to connect spiritually, for you to know that you have a soul, that spark of light of God that's so tiny but yet fills every part of you and is out there, and that you have a guardian angel that's the gatekeeper of your soul and loves you regardless of everything. Just that unconditional love and is there for you all of the time. You know, many a time I would be giving a talk and It could be a priest or a rabbi or a bishop or, you know, of some other religion. And one thing they ask, and they usually come up after the talk and they ask it privately. And they say, Lorna, is God real? God is real.
Amazing. Men of the
cloth.
Sure.
God is real. And I always say, don't leave it till the last moment of your human life to discover that. God is real, so allow your soul to come forward. Start to love yourself.
Is that the first step to becoming aware of angelic presence in our life? You were born with this. I had a voice starting at about 12 that started speaking to me, and it was always right on. And yet, somebody who has no experience at all, and they might come to a workshop or one of your talks, I can imagine it might be frustrating. Like, they feel like, why can't I? Why doesn't this happen for me? And so it would almost snowball into big, heavy effort when it's the opposite of effort, isn't it?
I love the way you said that. You know, that used to happen at the beginning, in the sense of people would say, why doesn't it happen for them? It is happening for them. It's like it's happening now for so many people. It's like when they come to a workshop here in Ireland, and I know I'm going over to the States. I'm flying on Tuesday and I'm doing some workshops. It's like as if God pours grace down on them to open them that little bit more. It is happening. I don't know how it's happening in that sense, humanly,
right.
but it is. And it's happening for everyone. It's an awakening. It's an opening. It's a recalling.
And to trust that we've got what we need, and just stay aware as possible as we can.
Asking your guardian angel for help.
Yeah, yeah.
Listen to that guidance. And every time you do the opposite, I often say, give yourself a little pinch and say, next time I will listen.
Right. Yes. Yes.
You know, a big lesson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't want to be judgmental of ourselves for not catching on the first time or second or third.
You have to love yourself.
Yeah. Well, Lorna, you have so much more going on than when we spoke in 2008. And you came certainly from a place where your angels really warned you and said, don't speak to anyone about this, keep this for us. And then in your mission, it's not just you anymore. Have the angels cautioned you about spiritual missions that have gone bad in the past? Not for you, but certainly spiritual leaders have taken advantage in many ways because they lose sight. And I'm wondering if the angels have talked to you about it.
I suppose for myself, they're always telling me not to lose sight in that way. But I don't see myself ever losing sight because, you know, we're doing so much and it's not about me. This is the thing. Nothing is about me. It's like the sanctuary. I was shown that as a child. I stood in this house with God holding my hand and I looked looking out these enormous windows. And when I was told I'd lived there one day, I thought God was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I did for a long time. But again, somebody in America, a husband and wife, and I know lots of people know them now, the book Angels in My Hair caused a miracle for them. It changed their life. And they decided to help. And they gave. The sanctuary wouldn't be there. They are the creators of it. They're the ones that have allowed it to happen. When a father or a mother's dying wishes to come and spend time with me, because my house is small, it's great to have more space. And the thing is, when Noah came, the sanctuary came after, but he was still alive. And to see him have so much fun, just like so many others. We don't charge for anything like that. That's different. You know, it could be an extreme case where a young teenager has witnessed the death of her brother and it affected her so much that she has become suicidal and huge issues. And someone in the family gets in touch with us and they bring her and we spend time together. It's not about the rest of the family. It's about this young person.
Yes.
And this young person is still here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or this young person is, you know, you get the parents to make sure that they get all the medical help, all of the counseling for them. And then you have this young person, you know, spending time with me and turning around and saying, Lorna, they don't understand all these professionals. I can't talk to them the way I talk to you.
Of course not.
You know, you've given me back the meaning of life. So it's not about me. It's about that young girl. It's about that mom. It's about that dad. It's about that child. It's about everyone. And I don't care who they are.
Right.
That's
of course
the difference.
Not. Yeah.
So much is happening. And I am writing as well. And I'm writing with a scientist at the moment to try and help with a few of his theories and his life to bring spirituality and religion maybe a little closer, maybe that bridge for all of us to open up and realize we're not just a human being. We are a spiritual being as well. Mm. Here's the human, here's the spiritual, and we're part it. Let's get together, let that intertwining happen where you don't get sick.
Yes, yes. Well, I'm excited to see that when that comes. Is there anything you would like to say in closing to our listeners, Lorna?
I would just say to them, I wish them good. I wish them happiness. I wish them hope. I wish them peace. And I ask for the American people. The American gathering angels have been gathering you from all over the world and from the nation that was there to be part of the new race. And that's very exciting for me. I know that yous are on the crossroad and yous haven't moved from the center of the crossroad, but at least now you're on the center of the crossroad. I think just one thing yous need to remember is that you are all Americans and you are the new race. And you can do it. Just love each other. Be that what God has shown me you will be. And I can't tell you everything of that, but be that. And you can be, because I believe in you.
Beautiful. Well, thank you.
There's another interview I did with Lorna Byrne that is also on our website, going back a few years when Angels in My Hair first was released. For anything Tributaries related, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Our podcasts are where you'd hope to find them. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.